Sherman tanks fired point blank at the 12-meter-high Lion's Gate, destroying a bus that had been positioned to block it, and blasted open the door. Then, led by a half-track commanded by Captain Yoram Zamush, an observant Jew whom Gur had promised would be the first to reach the Western Wall, the Israelis charged. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 231, The Lion of Judah at the Gates of Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. We occupy the heights overlooking the old city. In a little while we will enter it. The ancient city of Jerusalem, which for generations we have dreamt of and striven for, we will be the first to enter it. The Jewish nation is awaiting our victory. Israel awaits this historic hour. Be proud. Good luck. So Mata Gur famously said to his men before the entry of the IDF into the old city. Their first entry would take place at a site known as the Shar Arayot, the Lion's Gate, named for the feline figures etched on it. Whether or not those figures are actually lions are immaterial. It is the name that is significant, the reference to lions that deserves reflection. And the gate's place in Jewish history bears a profound poetry that should be appreciated today. To this day, the flag of Jerusalem bears a lion upon it, due to the description of the biblical Judah as a young lion. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Yehuda, Judah, is a lion cub. It is perhaps for this reason that the Temple Mount, or at least the site of the altar upon it, was known as Ariel, the Lion of God. And it is this name that is linked to a remarkable statement in the Talmud, which tells us that on the altar in Jerusalem, there crouched an animal made of miraculous luminous flame, an animal that would consume the sacrifices placed upon the altar. But the animal, the Talmud tells us, changed shapes in the transition from the first temple period to the second temple period. In the Jerusalem of Solomon and during the period of the kings of Jerusalem, in the first temple, the flame looked like a lion. On the altar of the second temple, in contrast, the flame was akin to a dog. Rabbi Norman Lamb, in a sermon about Zionism, approached the passage by focusing less on the literal meaning and more on the profound political message being made. The Second Temple period, as we have discussed in Jerusalem 365, did feature certain leaders of great spiritual splendor. Ezra, the men of the Great Assembly, Shimon the Righteous, Hillel, Yochanan ben Zakkai. And yet, with the exception of a small part of the Hasmonean period, the Jewish Commonwealth was entirely subservient to Persia, to Greece, to the Seleucids, to Rome. It was an age in which, to a great extent, the Jews were not independent and often utterly unable to act on behalf of the safety and security of the Jewish people on their own accord. The First Temple period featured constant spiritual setbacks, but it was also a period of Jewish independence. With this in mind, Rabbi Lamb interpreted the Talmudic passage, which spoke of a lion of fire on the altar in the First Temple and a dog in the Second. As Rabbi Lamb put it, quote, "The First Commonwealth was the period of the lion in Jewish history. It began with the conquest of Canaan by Joshua and the Israelites, went through the period of monarchy, the building of the first temple, until the defeat of the Israelites and their exile under Nebuchadnezzar. This was a colorful, if uncertain, period in Jewish history. There were many defeats as well as triumphs, moral backsliding as well as spiritual attainments. But above all, these were 900 glorious years of proud and dignified national selfhood. The fire on the altar was Revutza Kari, crouching like a lion." End quote. Rabbi Lamb's point is that independence in the Holy Land, as manifested from the age of Joshua through that of the First Temple, is itself a reason for great gratitude. And then, further explaining the Talmudic passage, Rabbi Lamb reflected that, quote, "The Second Commonwealth was the era of Kalev, the dog." And he added, "For 400 years we served different masters, Persia, Greece, Syria, Rome," end quote. To celebrate the modern state of Israel, Rabbi Lamb reflected, is to celebrate Jewish independence in the Holy Land, an embodiment of the fiery lion that the Talmud describes as crouching atop Jerusalem's altar. What came about in the years leading up to 1948, in the Battle of Independence, was, in Rabbi Lamb's words, quote, "an ancient spark of Gur Aryeh Yehuda, of Judah as a lion cub, and Jews rose like the lions of Judah to restore their land and their folk to their former eminence," end quote. It is with this in mind that we can appreciate the beginning of the third and most famous day of the Six-Day War. On the day before, a ceasefire proposal by the UN Security Council had been rejected by Egypt's UN ambassador, which allowed Israel to further advance in its efforts. Levi Eshkol had, by that day, agreed to advance on the Old City, and by the next morning, with another ceasefire proposal being advanced by the US and the Soviet Union, Moshe Dayan, acting as defense minister, also agreed that the IDF could move on the ancient site in the city. Describing U.S. Secretary of State Dean Rusk advancing the ceasefire proposal, Michael Oren writes, quote, "Rusk's cable reached Jerusalem at 7 a.m. following two intense hours of activity. political and military, which began when Dayan informed Eshkol that the Jordanian army was no longer retreating, but returning to its former positions. The Jordanians would try to hold their ground until a ceasefire came into effect. Though the IDF had yet to circle the old city, Dayan averred, it had better move swiftly to breach it. Eshkol agreed, and Dayan, supplied with an attack plan by Rabin, assigned Chaim Bar-Lev to oversee the operation. His orders were brief: reach the Jewish holy places as quickly as possible and refrain from using heavy weapons. And Oren further adds, Bar-Lev promptly contacted Narkus. There's a danger that the Security Council will decide on a ceasefire. You have to break into the old city immediately, but proceed carefully. Use your head. Narkus, in turn, radioed Gur at the Rockefeller Museum and ordered him to take Augusta Victoria Ridge at once and move his men from Herod's Gate east to the Lion's Gate, Vietnam in IDF code, the closest to the Western Wall. The Central Command Chief was anxious to get started. My experience fighting in Jerusalem in 1948 had scarred me deeply, he admitted to his staff after the war. In Jerusalem, I knew, while you don't finish today, you may not be able to finish tomorrow. End quote. Thus it was that at the Lion's Gate, the entry would begin, and Mata Gur had one man in mind as they entered for a special role. Michael Oren further writes, quote, at 9:45 a.m., Sherman tanks fired point blank at the 12-meter-high Lion's Gate, destroying a bus that had been positioned to block it, and blasted open the door. Then, led by a half-track commanded by Captain Yoram Zamush, an observant Jew whom Gur had promised would be the first to reach the Western Wall, the Israelis charged. Jordanian gunners shot from the walls and from rooftops around the square inside the gate, but the assault was overwhelming. Tanks lumbered forward, only to get wedged in the narrow alleyways, half-tracks, one of which bore Mata Gur and his staff, edged by Zamush's vehicle and headed for the Via Dolorosa, with its Stations of the Cross sacred to Christians. Other units fanned out toward the Damascus and the Jaffa gates, through the Muslim and Christian quarters, respectively. End quote. It is from Yoram Zamush that we have incredible, awe-inspiring reminiscences of this day. And today, as we bring our episode to a close and set the stage for the amazing stories that follow, we must allow Zamush to speak to us in his account given in Stephen Pressfield's aptly named book, Lion's Gate. Zamush said, quote, the Lion's Gate is approached uphill via a narrow, walled lane, the Lion's Gate Road. The passage is enclosed along its entire length. Above, on both sides, rise thick stone walls, 5 to 10 meters high. The lane is between 100 and 150 meters long. There's a thick metal-sheathed gate at the upper end. No cover. Men and vehicles advancing up the lane have no place to hide. I hold my company back on the main road, at the turn of the Lion's Gate Road, waiting for Mota's tanks. One appears, a Sherman with a 90-millimeter cannon. At the rear of the tank is an intercom telephone in a covered compartment. I dash to this and grab the receiver. The tank commander can hear me now. I identify myself as the paratroop company commander and tell him I have a fire order for him. Put 3 shells into the gate. The tank fires once and blows the right-hand door off its hinges. A new Mercedes bus squats on the right side of the lane. Hit the bus too. It might be booby-trapped or rigged with explosives. The tank's cannon booms again, setting the bus ablaze. My watch says 9:45. A company starts forward. The bus is cooking like an inferno. My men advance one step at a time, hugging the wall with their fingers on the triggers of their Uzis, FNs, and mags. I'm shouting to them to be ready to sling hand grenades if we receive fire from the gate or the walls. Another group of paratroopers hurries into the lane behind me. I recognize Kacha Kahaner from Battalion 28. My own soldiers are about 30 meters from the gate when suddenly Mata Gur's half-track appears in the lane from behind us. It speeds forward toward the Lion's Gate. Mata races past me, very excited, passes the tank, passes Kacha, and accelerates up the lane to the gate. He drives through. I'm dumbfounded. Mata is the brigade commander. How can he so recklessly risk his life? At this instant, Uzi Elam, my own battalion commander, rushes up to me. Zamosh, what are you waiting for? Go on, go in. Mata's half-track is well through the gate now. We hear no enemy fire. Go on, says Uzi. A company pours through. Inside the Lion's Gate is a small court. On the left and slightly uphill, I can see the Gate of the Tribes, which leads to the Temple Mount. End quote. Through the Lion's Gate to the Temple Mount. And, as we will hear from Zamush in future episodes, some of the most incredible spiritual and historical experiences in Jewish history unfolded as these men went from the Lion's Gate to the Temple Mount. A Temple Mount where, according to the Talmud, once a lion of fire had been seen. A lion all aflame, whose presence in Jewish Jerusalem restored would be felt in that moment once again. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.